This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. If you're anything like us, you don't just book trips, you run the numbers first. Is this flight actually a deal? Is that premium card pulling its weight? Should I use points here or save them for something better? Well, that's exactly what Smart Travel dives into. They break down which travel cards actually earn their keep and which ones just look impressive in your wallet. They'll walk you through the quick math for knowing when to pay with points versus cash, and they explain how to get real value from your rewards instead of settling for that tiny reward button at checkout. It's thoughtful, research-backed travel finance delivered in a way that feels approachable and actually useful the next time you're about to hit purchase. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. If you've ever looked at points and miles and thought, yeah, this all sounds great, but how am I supposed to do this with a larger family? Well, then today's episode is for you. Because booking one business class seat is one thing, but booking five or even seven? Well, that's a completely different game. Today's guest has spent the last decade figuring that puzzle out, taking his family of five to more than 20 countries using points and miles, including a recent multi-generational trip where he booked seven people to Japan, Hong Kong, and Singapore almost entirely in business class. But this episode isn't just about the flights. It's about using travel to expand your kids' worldview, giving them responsibility while exploring the world, and creating experiences your family will remember forever. If you've been trying to figure out how family travel actually works in the real world of points and miles, from earning the points to finding the seats to creating unforgettable experiences on the ground, well then this episode is what you've been waiting for.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I'm your host, DeAndre Koch. I have a fantastic guest lined up for all of you all today. But before we introduce him, a few housekeeping reminders we always have to do. You can catch all these episodes in their full entirety on our YouTube channel, as well as for those who watch on YouTube. Don't forget, every Friday we have our Quick Hits. That's our audio-only, up-to-date news in the world of points and miles and travel, and updates for Boldly Go as well. So as an example, if you haven't heard about our upcoming Boldly Go meetup, well then that means you either haven't subscribed to our newsletter or you're not listening on our Friday Quick Hits. And don't forget, we do have our podcast library that is officially live on our website as well, so that if you are brand new to the show and you want to filter through all the episodes that are great for beginners or business owners or talking hotel strategies or for a certain destination, you can go ahead and find all that with a quick search on our podcast page as well, and that's going to be linked in our show notes. And wherever you're listening to this, don't forget to give a like, leave a rating, leave a review. We'd love a 5-star rating, of course, and make sure to tell your friends also. So now, with all of that, I am excited for today's guest because we need more information. We need help. When I say we, I don't mean myself, but those with children need help understanding how to best travel when you have a family. And I've heard feedback within our community that we want more content and information for those who are doing family travel, especially at a high level. Well, I want to introduce to the show David. David has been a listener of our show for a while. He's been in Points and Miles for over 10 years. He got connected with the show by us talking through our payroll on credit card and Zelle money strategy with his wife being a business owner. And he's got a family of five who's been to over 20 countries with Points and Miles. And I thought this would be a really excellent sweet spot to go over because, as someone else in our community pointed out, the travel world just isn't best designed for families of five. So you have to be a little more nuanced, a little more research, and a little more strategic with it. And that's something that, candidly, I haven't had to do because for my wife and I, we're in the no kids world and that's where we're going to stay. So I want to bring all the knowledge to you all. And David, I know you're the person to do it. Welcome to the show.
I really appreciate that. Thanks, DeAndre. It's exciting to be here. I'm excited to chat with you. I've appreciated getting to connect with the community through the WhatsApp channel. I am excited for the upcoming meetup. I did see Miami is on the docket, so looking forward to that. And just looking forward to diving into Miles and Points with you and talking about how to do it with our family. So thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's jump into this, David, and just I'd love to know a little bit of background about yourself. You know, where are you? Where do you live? What do you do for a living? And what got you started into this world of Points and Miles?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a Midwest guy. So our family lives right near Minneapolis-St. Paul in Minnesota. So we're sort of in a hub, I guess, but we end up, you know, having to travel all over the place to get where we want to go, as is the case for most of us in the Midwest. But so my wife and I, we've been married for 21 years. We've got three kids that are now 13, 16, and 18. And so have, as you mentioned, have loved the opportunity to explore and travel with them. For my day job for the last couple decades, I've been working in a variety of different faith-based nonprofits, helping people navigate the world of homelessness, addiction, recovery, incarceration, things like that. And so I early on realized the money I was making in that type of work was not going to get me to places I wanted to go. So had to come up with a different solution for that, which led me to get connected with a friend of mine, actually from our church, who was telling me about the world of Points and Miles. And he kind of related it in that setting to kind of like salvation, where he was like, it sounds too good to be true, but it's actually just that good. Being able to figure out how you can travel to places and do it at a fraction of the price. And so I drank the Kool-Aid and really went down the rabbit hole and have been having a lot of fun for the last decade doing it.
I absolutely love that. And you're right. We've had others on the show that have been in the nonprofit space. And as you mentioned, I mean, you're giving back so much of your time and your resources that don't necessarily come back to you in the way of compensation and allowing to just pay cash for business class all over the world. And so greatly appreciate the work that you do in your community. And that same type of work was able to allow you to find the Points and Miles world. So I'd love to ask you, David, again, because this is really going to be an opportunity for you to share a perspective that I don't personally have. What do you think most people misunderstand about family travel with points? Because I know that's going to be very, very different from the solo or the coupled travel or travelers.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that one of the greatest misconceptions when people start getting into the world of Points and Miles is they end up watching all these influencers or videos or Instagram feeds, and they see people doing these extravagant trips and then run into the roadblocks of, wait, I need to get five of these tickets on one flight for my family. Like, you get kind of this view that is not realistic at all of what travel is needing to look like, especially early on. And the thing I misunderstood early on was thinking that I needed to get to that aspirational level of travel quicker than I think was realistic. And sometimes it can just kind of stunt people to think, well, if I can't do that, then why even try? And so I think for our family, it meant figuring out what were the small wins right up front, whether it's picking out, okay, we're going to do for this trip one direction, we're going to figure out how to get it on points, and we're going to do it in economy. Like our first family trip we did with the five of us, we found tickets one way in economy to Puerto Rico. We found a Hilton that had an Embassy Suites, and we could jam our whole family in it on the beach, and we loved it. We got the fifth night free. We did, like, it was an amazing entry point to experience what it could be like. But I think that misunderstanding of people thinking that you're going to be able to do what they see other people doing who are either solo travelers, traveling with one other person, and then just getting frustrated when they realize, well, none of this works the same way when you're trying to do it with a family.
I absolutely love that. I mean, it talks through the thought process because, yes, I think the attractiveness, what makes many of us say, oh, well, this is a rabbit hole worth going down, is because we see the Maldives, we see the Emirates, we see the Etihad residence type flights and hotel stays, and that's what we want to shoot for. And it is much easier to do that when it's just one person versus a family of five. And so I really love how you mentioned that it's better to find that bite-sized piece that you can start with and learn from and use that to continue to build from. And so today, I know we're going to unpack a couple of the kind of phenomenal aspirational trips that you've recently done with your family. And one of those, I know, involved booking for seven people, let alone five. So I really have to ask you, is once you get above, I don't know, three or four, is it just kind of the same game, or is it that much different or difficult going from five people to seven people?
Yeah, it is different going from three people to five people to seven people. I think of it in the worlds of points and miles that it's not, at that point, it's not about addition, it's multiplication to try and figure it out. That to be able to say, like every once in a while, you'll get like sign up for a variety of alert features and you'll get an alert saying there's nine seats available on this flight. And maybe there were, but my experience is when by the time you get in there, if somebody else is alerting you to it, it's very unlikely there's actually nine in there. So, I mean, it ends up being one needing to just be ultimately flexible to be able to say not just flexible about when you're going to go, but where you're going to go, what city you're going to actually leave from, what's the process you want to do, where sometimes it's, you can get, maybe with our family of five, sometimes I can get all five at the same time, but more often than not, it's book what I can get in the moment, maybe add a few others that are workable in a different class of service, and then just keep an eye on it. But it's rarely a one and done experience has been what I've run into. And so it really requires a bit of patience and recognizing, yeah, this, I can't let, you know, perfect be the enemy of good. And sometimes you just got to take what you can get and just run with it.
I'm a huge fan of that quote. I love that. David, I'm curious, and I think you can speak to the evolution here in a way that perhaps other people have been on the show can't, or that are in the Points and Miles world can, I should say. And that's because you have older children. In fact, your oldest is 18. So in the time you've been in Points and Miles, you've had an evolution of your kids getting older. And so I'm curious, and I know, of course, the Points and Miles world have also dramatically changed over the last 10 plus years. But can you speak to a little bit of how your booking strategy now might work versus when your kids were younger? I'm making an assumption here. I'm assuming your 18-year-old might be able to be in a different cabin in the corner in the back by themselves and be fine, right? So do you ever mix cabins? You know, are you splitting people up on different flights? Like, how are you making this work with a group of five or seven? We haven't even talked about where you've gone yet, which I'm going to save that because I think it's such an amazing trip. But I just want to talk through the high-level concepts first before we dig to the details.
There's a difference between what I've booked and what we've actually flown. I think anybody who's been doing this for a while, it's like for every trip, I mean, there's multiple bookings for every flight every possible iteration as you're just trying to, I mean, for me, it's fun because it's just a puzzle. Like I just get to try and figure out, okay, how can I kind of work this in my advantage? And so you end up rebooking and rebooking. And so for our five, at least for when that group we travel with the most with my wife and I and our kids, my wife and I have really said that when we think of family travel, we want the trip to start when we get on the plane. And so that means having an opportunity to be connecting with our kids while we're on the plane and that's just part of the experience. So we've committed that we're going to actually just stay in the same cabin with them, which doesn't mean I've always been able to book it all at the same time in the same cabin, but we have said like, okay, we'll kind of maneuver around if we need to. Or I mean, there have been times where we've set up flights where initially maybe I'm sitting with our two boys in premium economy, my wife might be in business with my daughter, and then we eventually get the other few tickets to get all of us up in business. Or say, hey, maybe why don't we all be in premium economy, which at this point in our journey of this, I'm a hard no for that, especially for longer flights. But it's that difference between, I think sometimes people imagine that if you want to sit up front, you need to book everything up front to begin with. versus seeing it as, no, it's like bargaining for a car. You kind of start with the best, like what the offer you can get, and then start working your way there and kind of play around with different opportunities that you might have to get yourself in the cabin you want to be eventually.
Well, David, how far in advance are you typically planning? Because I know some people in the Points and Miles world are, you know, day 360 with Japan Airlines or 365, right? They're waiting up at midnight for the clock to tick over or whatever it may be to snag that redemption. There are others that are completely fine with the Lufthansa, hey, this deal is available 3 days from now. And there's the in-betweens. And I'm more in the in-betweens. I don't think I've ever booked a flight a year out, although there might be a first this year as I'm working on Japan Airlines as I actually specifically. But we are more in the camp of like 3 to 4 months on average, maybe 6 at the longest. So can you talk through your typical timeline when booking and planning these trips? And obviously it might be a staged approach, but what do you typically find has worked the best for you?
Yeah, you know, because it's like a staged process, as you said, where, I mean, it really means we need to try and hit all the times when airlines are releasing seats. So if we know that in general, an airline's going to release some seats, you know, unless they decide to nerf up their whole award chart, as they're prone to do without letting us know. But if, like, you get the general idea of, like, here's when they normally release them, then I'm normally trying to get on there a year in advance to be able to at least get some of those seats at that point. And then we'll set up alerts to be able to track them along the way. But yeah, I mean, with a family of five, it's really hard if your goal is to be in business class or first class or something like that. If you're not trying to hit that initial release along with other releases along the way, you're going to really have a difficult time in most airlines, at least in my experience.
Well, speaking of airlines, David, have there been any airlines that you feel have been the most helpful for getting more seats often or not for a family your size?
You know, I mean, we've used quite a few different ones. I think the one that we used a lot when our kids were younger, and part of it is because we were in Minneapolis, which is a Delta hub, so a lot of SkyTeam flights are coming out of here. So we flew a lot of KLM to Europe. And I mean, especially when our kids were younger, and then it was you get that 25% off the award price for kids, what is it, under 11, I think?
Sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty clutch for us to get some cheaper flights. And so we've got this like whole city of Delft houses in our living room, which I love. Those are so fun. So KLM has been a great tool. I mean, we've been able to book flights really early on using Life Miles on a variety of Star Alliance carriers. Done some with Virgin Atlantic. Again, some of that works well being in a SkyTeam hub. But then when we look kind of to not Europe, if we look over to Asia, I mean, Singapore Airlines continues to be clutch. The prices, the miles prices can be a little on the higher end, but the availability they release is pretty unbelievable right at the front end. So at least at this point, it's still pretty consistent that if I look at schedule opening, I'm going to be able to get 5 tickets for our family on Singapore, and then being able to play around with different stopovers and have some fun in Singapore en route to wherever we're going. So that's been really helpful. I know we've also done some using Asia Miles, but not flying on Cathay. So used Asia Miles to fly JAL, used Asia Miles to fly some other carriers in that part of the world, which they tend to release a fair amount of partner space using their miles too.
After hearing our episode on autopilot, Brian signed up, and within 12 hours, he got $65 in Delta flight credits and saved over 6,000 SkyMiles on flights he had already booked. Autopilot helps make sure you never overpay for travel again by automatically tracking your flights and hotels and repricing them when prices drop, without you constantly checking airline apps or hotel websites yourself. It keeps your same seats, your same cabin, your same itinerary, and now even tracks hotel rates too. You don't have to do anything but sign up and let it work in the background. And the best part is, you only pay when they've actually saved you money. If you want to try it out, head to boldlygo.world/autopilot or click the link in the description. And if you use promo code BOLDLYGO, you'll get your first month of the pro version completely free. Autopilot, never overpay for travel again. Well, I'm curious, David, before we get into this, one of the trips that you've taken here, what's been your strategy for earning points? Because obviously you and your wife, I assume, you know, there's P1, P2, maybe you have a P3 now that you have an 18-year-old, but what's been your strategy at this point? Because obviously there's levels to the points and miles game, and not only is perhaps finding availability and award availability, especially for premium cabins, much harder as you go up in people. If you're looking for the business class or the aspirational flights, as you mentioned, these can get pricey with points, which means you have to earn a lot of points as well to do it. And that can be really hard to do if every time you're doing a booking, you're booking for five people versus one or two. So what's been your points earning strategy over the years? Is it a lot of the I assume also with family of five, you know, groceries and food cost a lot, right? So I'm sure that's mixed in there. But is there a good process of opening cards? Your wife's a business owner. Can you talk through a little bit about what that strategy has looked like for you guys over the years?
Yeah. And I guess the caveat I would give is that it was probably about 4 or 5 years into this 10-year journey of using points and miles that we ever booked our family of five on international business class flights. So I think that myth of this is a real quick process to move towards is something I just want to dispel, that like you can take amazing trips with your family, ride in the back of the bus, and have a lot of fun. And so I think one, to just say that up front, that it took a while to figure out what's a kind of earning strategy that made sense for us as a family. And then just that learning curve of trying to understand different airline miles and points currencies, how they get used, when they're most valuable, how to like integrate that into a strategy. So I guess with that being said, I mean, our strategy tends to be that, I mean, we do cycle through some credit cards every year. I'd say a combination of, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, my wife and I as a P1 and P2, and then just this year adding our daughter who's now in college, which is both another person that can get some cards and the blessing and curse of college that we can pay for on a card, which is, I guess, great and a struggle all at the same time. So that's certainly part of it. I mean, we can run a lot of expenses through my wife's business, which is incredibly helpful. Using that, the Zill Money tool to run payroll through has been really helpful too. I generally say that to do long haul business class flights with your family, everyday expenses are rarely going to move the needle. I mean, there's just not enough groceries you can buy to get you there. So opening up, I mean, I'd say in general, 3 to 5 cards a year for each of us, and then maybe a few for the business also is pretty normal. And then I'm having to figure out how to, you know, patiently bring in my daughter's, you know, P3 thing. Like, it feels like almost a kid in a candy store being like, wow, it's an account that doesn't have any cards on it. They don't, like, you haven't done anything that's irritated any banks yet. Like, they really like you at this point. So that part, I'm needing to figure out just how to kind of, you know, slow my roll on it. But yeah, so those are a lot of things. And we also do things like some gift card reselling. We do some of the like gold buying and reselling out of Costco, that kind of thing. So a variety of different ways to try and creatively come up with ways to kind of build up points and miles so that we can, as you'll see when we talk about trips, the numbers are not small when you start adding up 5 to 7 people round trip, business class, international. Like it starts to balloon quite a bit if you want to do it in a meaningful way. And so then it's trying to figure out where are the places that we want to focus on spending those miles and points? Where do we want to budget out for a trip to be able to use cash to do it? But trying to figure out that balancing act is something we're always navigating.
That's super helpful. And at the same time, you said a statement that I really hadn't given much thought to, and that's the, I don't know the right word, but in my mind, I see like the pristineness of a brand new, you know, user at 18 from a credit history, right? Like they can come in and do the step-by-step increase of Amex Green to Gold to Platinum, like all these different things that you have to figure out now, like what makes the most sense for this person and educating them in the space. And I'm not sure if you did this yourself, but I know I've recommended clients adding their young children, sometimes infants, as authorized users, especially on no-fee cards that they know they're never going to close, because that can give them this length of credit history that by the time they're 18, they have an 18-year length of credit history. So they are already have this pristine high tier level of credit and resource that they can go into. It sets them up with a solid foundation for the future. But I, like I said, I've never given much thought to the fact that there's some game planning when, just as when you're brand new into this world, that you get to set up for this new individual, that your new P3 or P4 or P5.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we did some of that same stuff, not as early with our kids, but definitely when they turned 13, added them as authorized users to some Amex cards. And particularly because we're in Minneapolis, we ended up getting the Morgan Stanley Platinum card, and we could get free authorized users, and then we could get all of our kids into Sky Clubs for free. And so that was helpful because we were flying Delta a lot. But yeah, I mean, it's in many ways when our kid turned 18, I could kind of look back at my strategy for how I started this and try and fix all the mistakes I made to say, oh man, why did I open that when it was like, I looked back and saw some Delta business card that I think I opened when it had like a 30,000 mile bonus. And I look back on stuff like that and I'm like, what an idiot. Like, so I think some of those things where now I can look at it and be like, okay, and this is the perfectionist in me. I start being like, okay, how do I do this perfectly with my kid? Which probably gets me into all sorts of different trouble, but it is interesting.
I love that, David. This is awesome, and I appreciate that setup, because what I wanted to do is lay the foundation of the thought process, the planning that goes into it. How do you manage being a family of five and in the points and miles world? Because what we're about to talk about is in direct contrast to what you started with, where you talk about, hey, a bite-sized redemption, right? How it took you 4 to 5 years before you got into business class. We're going to elevate this now to that aspirational level. And I know I've hyped it up already, so I'll get to the listeners. Kind of listeners are like, well, what are we talking about? So David, can you talk about this trip that you took 7 people in business class with? Where'd you go? What'd you do? And how'd you do it?
Yeah, absolutely. This was for sure the most complicated trip I've had to figure out for our crew. So it was our five and then my parents, who are in their early 70s. And the whole idea of this trip, initially it was just going to be an anniversary trip for my wife and I for our 20th anniversary. And I wanted to take her back to a place I had been. So when I was in elementary school, my family lived in Asia and we lived in Hong Kong. My dad was a principal of an international school. And the experience of living and traveling internationally just shaped who I am as a person. And I always wanted my kids to experience what it felt like to have your worldview just flipped on its head by showing up in different places. And so this was one of those trips that when my wife and I initially were thinking, let's do an anniversary trip, then it quickly morphed to, no, let's bring our kids with us. And then it morphed to, no, let's bring my parents with also, because we wanted to give them an opportunity for us all to kind of re-experience this place. So we did a trip that we decided, well, let's not just hit one spot, let's go to 3 different spots. So we ended up doing, it was about 2.5 weeks that we spent in a combination of started out in Japan and then made our way to Hong Kong and then made our way to Singapore. And so we did this kind of epic 2.5 week trip where we started out by making our way to Tokyo, and then we were there for about 5 days, and then made our way to Hong Kong where we were for another 5 days, and then ended our trip in Singapore for 3 days, and then made our way back to the States.
I love that. And you've covered 2 out of 3 places that I have absolutely loved. And the only reason why I haven't mentioned the third, Japan, is because I haven't been there yet. Well, I have the layover, but nothing substantial. So I know I'm going to love it because we've loved every country we've been to in Asia. So can you talk through, well, you've already gone through kind of your philosophy and what it takes to book these. So we don't have to get super, super, super nuanced here just for sake of time. But can you talk about what did the points look like for this type of redemption? What programs did you use? Did you guys all fly together? Can you talk through what that was like?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did end up all flying together. And in all the flights, minus one, we were all in business class. And one of them, we're not all in business class because my mom ended up being in first class. So too bad for her. She didn't get to sit with us. But
unfortunately,
I think she was fine. So yeah, she struggled through it. But on the way out, we flew out of O'Hare and went from there to Haneda in Tokyo. And so that was booked with a combination of Asia Miles on a Japan Airlines flight, and then also American Airlines miles for the same Japan Airlines flight. So we were able to book 5 of the 7 tickets right around the time that the schedule opened using Asia Miles. So 4 of them we booked in business class when it opened, and then about a week later, one of the tickets in first opened. So we booked that one. And then there was not another seat that opened up for a long time in business class on that same flight. So we ended up booking 2 in premium economy. And then about 4 days before the flight, a couple opened up in business class. So was able to get the whole crew in business class. And so those were, I mean, the Asia Mile tickets at that point were 75,000 miles each for business class. The first class ticket was 120. And then when we finally booked the AA tickets, those ones were 60,000 American Airlines miles. So, I mean, you add it up, it's still quite a few miles. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of, what did I do the math here, 540,000 miles for one way for 7 people from Chicago to Tokyo, which for those who have kind of navigated that space is not bad for 7 of us in business class or first class to get over there. And also got to do that, the AA flagship in O'Hare, which, you know, O'Hare's not known for being a great spot for lounges, but that one was real nice. So I had a lot of fun doing that. And then moving around in between the countries, we did some of those flights in business class, some were in economy, but we used Asia Miles, flew on Cathay, flew Singapore from Hong Kong to Singapore, and then we ended up flying Singapore Airlines home from Singapore back to San Francisco on the way home. And the Singapore Airlines ones, that was one of those where we could book all 7 at one time in business class, 107,000 miles each. So we're, you know, 750-ish thousand miles to get everybody home in business class. So, I mean, just the flights to Japan and then home from Singapore, we're right around 1.2 million miles to be able to do that. So it's a lot of miles to be able to do that, but also just an unbelievable experience on both of those airlines, which are certainly 2 of my favorites.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode.
Yeah, it sounds like a fantastic trip, fantastic redemption, great redemption numbers as well, especially for what that would have cost in actual cash. So absolutely incredible there. I'm curious, did you also choose to stay in hotels with points? What was kind of the on-the-ground game plan? Obviously, you're staying in 3 different countries, so I'm sure it mixed it together. Did you go for the free dining certificates and the suite upgrade awards, or did you just opt for like an Airbnb? Because of course, it is 7 of you guys, and it's just easier to have, I don't know, 4 different bedrooms or whatever it may be. What was the on-the-ground experience like?
Yeah, we've done a lot of stays in a lot of different hotels. We've done some Airbnbs. We've stayed in castles in different places. For this trip, we ended up staying in a lot of hotels. So in Tokyo, we stayed at the Hyatt Centric Ginza, which we loved it. I mean, just an incredible spot in each of the hotels. We needed 3 rooms, though. So it was certainly a lot of Hyatt points. And we used a lot of suite upgrades. Because at this point, there was still, if you were a globalist, you had pretty much unlimited guest of honor. So I was guest of honoring my wife into a room, guest of honoring my parents into their room, and then using suite upgrades on my room. And so we stayed at the Hyatt Centric Ginza. I did hear one of your stories of that reminded me of our stay in Hong Kong because we stayed at that Grand Hyatt in Hong Kong.
Such an incredible property.
Oh my gosh, we loved it. I mean, and we used suite upgrades also, so we had those rooms just looking out over the harbor, and then, I mean, that club lounge on the 30th floor is really hard to beat. So loved that stay. And then in Singapore, we stayed at an Intercontinental. My dad had been doing some stays where he just racked up a ton of IHG points. So we were able to stay there, which was, it was a great stay. We're actually heading back to Singapore this summer and are going to try out the Andaz, but that's, we'll see how they compare.
Nice. I love that. I can't just focus on the points aspect because obviously this was a big milestone trip, right? 20th anniversary. You didn't just go you and your wife. You brought not just your kids, but your parents too, which was incredible. I'm really curious, what were some of the highlights from these destinations that weren't about the suite, the view, the business class flights? What were some of the experiences that made you say, you know what, this is what points and miles is about, is what it can create, which is not just the stay and the quote-unquote nearly free travel. So what were the highlights from these destinations?
Yeah, there were so many amazing memories with our family. I mean, when I think of each of them, so like when I think of Tokyo, I mean, one of the things we love to do, and I would highly recommend if you've got kids, is we love to do food tours anywhere we go, because it's always something our kids love to do. They love to just try out different food. And so we did a food tour in Tokyo, which was amazing. It was one of the secret food tours. So if anybody's interested to check that out, our guide Yumi was fantastic. I just loved getting to spend a day with her. Because of the age of our kids and a couple of our boys who loved Pokemon, we ended up going to that Pokemon Center in Tokyo, which is just a wild experience. It was nothing like I thought it would be and nothing like it ended up being, but just it did take a lot of work to arrange the tickets for that. So if you're interested in it, you know, feel free to reach out to me on the WhatsApp channel. I can walk you through it, but it's mildly complicated. So we did that. And then we also went to Team Lab Planets in Tokyo, which is super cool, which is sort of this like experiential art exhibit where you get to walk through it and it just feels like you're in art. Like you don't wear shoes. There's kind of water in the ground in some areas and there's just kind of art all over and really, really fun with kids. So then we also, because we were in Tokyo, we thought we have to do a bullet train ride with our kids. So we ended up going to Kyoto. We just spent a day there. We got to explore some bamboo forests. And my daughter decided to embarrass me by making me the center of a TikTok video that I didn't understand. But we did that, which was really fun. And so, yeah, I mean, Japan was amazing. Our family definitely wants to go back, which is why I, you know, burned pretty much all of my built points when that bonus happened and am, you know, like everybody else trying to figure out how I can find some award space to get back there. But it's on the list and, you know, has to be on the list in the next 3 years before all those points go away. So, and then when we went to Hong Kong, I mean, we, because it was a place we had lived, we also got to go see some of our friends who still live there, which was amazing. So we went to the other side of the island, went to Stanley Market, which is just an incredible spot to explore. We did the Victoria Peak tram, which was something we remembered as a family, just because we would actually use that tram to commute different places and to get to the other side of the island. And so experiencing that together. And then we probably our kids' favorite memory was we did this dim sum cruise out in the harbor where it was on one of those old ships that just looks like it looks like it's been around for 1,000 years. And so you're sitting there kind of going through the harbor while they feed you amazing food, which was really, really incredible. And then finally in Hong Kong, we went to Hong Kong Disneyland, which I wasn't there when we had lived there previously. And so to be able to do that, I mean, it's when we do family trips, we always like to plan somewhere in the middle of a trip, something that is like 100% kid focused, that is not going to be a tour. It's not going to be anything like cultural, for lack of a better term. Like, this is not a good for you day. This is just, let's just go have fun. And so we did Disneyland, which was really a blast. And like, there was almost nobody there. And so we had a great time doing that in Hong Kong. And then Singapore, I mean, none of us had been to before. And so we ended up doing another food tour slash like private tour with a guide. This woman, her title is the Witty Guide, and she was amazing. And so kind of took us around to three different sections of Singapore. We got to try a lot of different food. I was surprised by, went to some hawker markets together, got to go to the Cloud Forest and explore Gardens by the Bay, and, you know, had to have a Singapore sling at raffles. So all those kinds of things. And then, I mean, one of our normal rhythms when we're traveling with our kids is every day one of our kids is responsible to be our guide for the day. So we'll tell them where we're going and just give them a phone, and their job is to figure out public transit and to get us from one spot to another. And it's really cool to see the way that that has changed over a decade of doing that with our kids, where now, I mean, they are just, they're pros at figuring out a Tokyo subway system or figuring out how they get from one place to another on a bus in Singapore. And so I think I would just encourage anybody who's traveling with their kids to give the kids some responsibility to get you from place to place and just see how it like builds their confidence, their sense of kind of understanding how different systems work. And so that's something we love to do everywhere.
David, this is incredible. I'm so blown away in so many different ways for a number of reasons. I think even as someone who doesn't have kids and won't have kids, I'm like, the way that you are doing this is phenomenal. And it's so inspirational. Some of the things that you've said so far, right? Like you made the point when you fly, you know, you're all going to be in the same cabin. The fact that there's a day that's dedicated to just like, let's just have fun. Okay, one of you kids is our guide for the day. Get us from point A to point B. These are phenomenal. I absolutely love the idea and the growth and the development from all of these different things. And I'm so glad that you're talking through this today. And this is the first trip. We have another trip we still have to get to. But I want to point out one thing. You're like, you know, hey, if you have kids, these would be great things. I will say the first two things you mentioned, when we go to Tokyo, we absolutely have to do the food tour and the Pokemon for two reasons. A, for most of our travels, we actually have done a food tour. Taryn's the one that seeks it out and finds it. We've done walking food tours in many of the countries we've been to. Unfortunately, as I mentioned on the show, Taryn wasn't feeling well in Hong Kong, so we weren't able to do a food tour there. But we absolutely will be doing all the food things in Tokyo. I got to plan, like, do I work out more beforehand or just plan to lose the weight after? So I got to kind of game plan around that. But the second is Taryn, my wife, is a huge Pokemon fan, and she's already told me we're doing all the Pokemon things in Japan. So I think I got to talk to you offline and figure out how to navigate what, I don't even know what it is that you said it was, but it sounds like it's a place we have to go, and I got to figure out how to get the tickets to it. So I'm making a note of that for next year when we do it. To figure out how to do it. But I love all the things, the bullet train, all the things you talk about. That was absolutely incredible. I love the development of how you do family travel.
I really appreciate that. Yeah, I think it's so unique based on what your kids love. And so I mean, our goal with all of this with family travel is how do we get our kids to love to experience the world and to see it in different ways? And so, I mean, without even getting into it, and at this point now, as our kids have gotten older, it's working with them to actually start like booking and developing the trips. I mean, it was last year, my son and I and my dad ended up going to Scotland, just the three of us. And so my son helped to build that. But it was really driven by him because he wanted to go play golf in Scotland. And I was like, well, sure, I'm willing to do that. Or the year before, my daughter and I did a long weekend trip to Egypt because she was like, I want to experience the pyramids. And I was like, all right, I want to experience the pyramids. And then working with her to say, all right, how do we book this thing? And trying to figure out the world of points and miles and help her learn it a little bit. So like to be able to use it not just as an adventure to do with your family, but like how can I build up a skill and an excitement and passion in them that they can see that they can figure it out too.
Absolutely phenomenal, David. I've got to ask you, travel I know is not perfect and there's hiccups all the time and all those different things. In hindsight, is there anything about this trip that you would do differently next time? Maybe an ease of booking, maybe different place to stay. Was there any element that you really think is worth noting that you would do different, even as incredible as this trip was for this group of seven?
I mean, I think the biggest general thing, which I, you know, as traveling with kids who are in school, there's not much you can do about it, but traveling in the summer in Asia is a bit brutal. So we didn't mention this was in late July, early August, which is no joke in all three of these places. So, I mean, there were some real sweaty days and days where you're like, oh my gosh, like, can we just stay in the air conditioning for right now? So if you've got the flexibility, you've got the ability to choose a different time of year that's not based on a summer schedule with your kids, I would not have chosen to go in the summer, but it's also, it wasn't bad enough that we're going to avoid it going forward. I mean, our five are going to Thailand for a couple weeks this coming summer, and it's like, people are like, well, it's going to be hot. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, that's when we can go and we're going to do it and we'll figure it out and we'll just hop in the pool and it'll be okay. So, I mean, there's certainly that piece. One of the things we always try and do, especially with our family, that I could not recommend highly enough, and I screwed it up on this trip, but was to, every time you arrive off of an international flight where you are jet lagged, have somebody at the airport with a sign with your family's name ready to take you wherever you need to go. Because trying to, like, corral children who are exhausted while you're also exhausted and then figure out public transit is a bit brutal. And so I kind of screwed that one up on this trip. So I wish I would have done that differently. And I think about those kind of things of, like, where are the places that it's going to make the biggest impact to throw money at to make it more fun for your family. So I think that was one I probably would have done a little bit differently. And I think we've learned our lesson for future trips.
I love that, David, and I 100% understand what you're talking about, because the time I spent in Thailand was in the month of August. The time I spent in Singapore, Taryn and I, was in the month of August. And yes, absolute brutal. I mean, Singapore it's hotter than you actually can probably think that it gets. Like, it's like Vegas heat. It's kind of wild how hot it gets in Singapore. So I completely get that. Although you're going to Thailand in the summertime, Bangkok is terrible from a heat standpoint, but the rest of the country is a lot better. So it's not going to be as hot as it feels as you first get there. So just something to look forward to.
Well, I appreciate that. We're only in Bangkok a couple days, so that I'm sure it'll be great.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you need. Let's move on, because I have another trip of yours that I want to talk about. And this is a little bit different. So here we just talked about Asia, these amazing Asian countries, family of seven, booking. Now let's move to Europe and talk through Austria and Switzerland. Can you talk about what that trip was like?
Yeah, absolutely. And this, I mean, like every trip, it's driven by something that we're talking as a family that we want to do. And so this one was based on my daughter and son both had been in different performances of The Sound of Music. And so they were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to go to Salzburg? Because that's where so much of The Sound of Music is from, and you can visit parts where the movie were filmed and stuff like that. So we were like, all right, yeah, let's figure it out. So we ended up starting in Vienna. And so the way that one ended up working was we booked those flights using Life Miles, and we ended up flying on Lufthansa. And it wasn't my favorite flight experience, but we said, like, let's just experience it, because we saw that we could fly on a 747 on the upper deck. And we were like, ah, oh, that's just cool. And so we wanted to give our kids that experience. I mean, it's a great, like, experience to do. And, you know, in contrast to flying in economy, it was unbelievable. But if you've experienced other business class flights, it's a bit meh. But it was still great. So we flew from O'Hare again to Vienna, and then we spent a couple days in Vienna, and then ended up traveling our way from one side of Austria all the way to Zurich. So we rented a car after a couple days in Vienna, and then just made our way across the whole country of Austria, and then ended up flying home from Zurich.
That's really cool. Now, anything you did unique or notable in the booking process for this? I mean, you just talked about how you were able to book for seven. Anything that you think would be notable for the listeners about how you had to approach booking business class for five?
You know, with this one, again, we booked it right at the beginning of the calendar opening. And what I had noticed was I thought I was going to end up booking Lufthansa with Aeroplan miles. And that ended up, the booking price was just a lot higher. And then I ended up seeing maybe a couple days later than we thought we were going to go, it showing up on Life Miles and showed up for $63,000 per person and $90 in taxes. And so it was a great deal. I would say Life Miles is generally known for being irritating to book with. And so if you don't have the constitution for an irritating website to deal with, just doing it on Aeroplan is great. And I think it was probably closer to 80 or 90,000 miles per person, and certainly would have been a lot simpler, but kind of perfectionist in me was like, no, I could save, you know, 20,000 miles and just want to harm myself while I was doing it. But that all worked out. And then on our way home, we ended up back in KLM, which again is one of my favorites. So we flew KLM from Zurich and then I think through Amsterdam to Minneapolis. And that was another great option. I think at that point we were able to, at calendar opening, we're able to book each of those for 50,000 miles. So it was 250,000 miles. I think at that point it was $250 per person in taxes. So both of those, again, though, were kind of right at the booking window, both for the outbound and the return. And so I think you've talked about it a number of times with other guests, but I think that reminder, especially for family travel, one way is, or I don't know how else you do it other than just booking two different one ways, going one direction over the other, to be able to find the availability and to be able to be flexible about what airline you're flying, where you're flying to, where you're flying from, being willing to do positioning flights as needed. So I think all of that flexibility really plays into it to be able to get the five tickets you need.
Yeah, I like that you called out to that, because this is a great opportunity to remind the listeners, and I'm going to essentially reiterate, or have you reiterate what you just said by me asking you a question, which is, did you already have set, we need to go this day and get back this day, or did the points and the efficiency of points dictate the dates that you traveled?
For sure, the efficiency of the points dictated when we traveled. So, I mean, we had a general window of about a month that we were like, all right, sometime in this month, I think we want to do this trip. And then I kind of got my window and then was told I'm allowed to book a flight sometime in this window. And so then it was just trying to track when it's available, what you're noticing. I mean, the part that feels a little sketchy at times is you've got to book that flight there before the schedule is even released for the flight coming home. So you start getting pot committed on the trip, which hopefully you've got a ticket that is able to be easily moved or canceled or adjusted or things like that, which again is why booking with Life Miles is a little scary at times, because adjusting it, moving it, canceling it can be problematic at best.
Absolutely. I've heard some horror stories. Haven't had to deal with them myself, thankfully, but I have heard many of the horror stories with Life Miles. Now, on the ground, again, we've talked about the flying and the flying experience. On the ground, what was the stay like? Any experiential stays you had? I mean, you've already mentioned that you guys have stayed in castles, Airbnbs, hotels. What was that like for this type of trip? What did you choose? Was it more cash-based castles, points-based stays? What was it?
Yeah, so it was a little bit of both. The front and the back of the trip were hotels. So on the front end, because, I don't know, I have this thing where I like to try and experience the different Park Hyatt hotels that are around, and there's a couple really nice ones in these spots. So we ended up staying at the Park Hyatt Vienna on the front end, mostly because I showed pictures to my kids of how there's a swimming pool inside an old bank vault, and they thought that was really cool. And I mean, a breakfast at a Park Hyatt, it's really hard to beat, especially if you're globalist and you get it for free. And I mean, it's just kind of next level. So we stayed there in Vienna. We stayed there a couple days. Again, we did another food tour, which was so fun. And the Vienna food scene was really cool. And like the coffee shop scene and the kids getting to try, like we went to this one stand where, I mean, it's all about the sausages. And so you like get these sausages and they have like five different mustards, and then they do this thing where they like grate up fresh horseradish. And so you dip the sausage in mustard and then dip it in fresh horseradish so it sticks. And so we had so much fun with that. So then we left Vienna, we grabbed a car, and we went to the town of Hallstatt, which, for those that are not aware, this is the town, again, which our kids thought was cool because it's the town that Arendelle from Frozen was kind of based off of. So it's right on a lake. It's unbelievably gorgeous. Like, you can't drive a car into it, so you park on the outside of the city and then kind of wander through the cobblestone streets. And so we booked an Airbnb there, which was kind of right on the water and was such a cool spot. And so we spent a couple days there. We did a gondola ride that takes you up to the top of this mountain. And then as part of our, like, we want to give kids experiences of the places that they're in. On our way to Hallstatt, we visited the Mauthausen concentration camp and spent a day there with our kids to just give them a sense of place of where are we, what happened here, what's really going on, and spent some time talking about what happened in that spot. And so again, it's trying to figure out, how do we with our kids have fun and help them realize that their worldview needs to get bigger than it actually is. So we did that. We spent some time in Hallstatt, and then we made our way to Salzburg, which we stayed at a Radisson there, right in the kind of city center, and which was a great spot. We ended up using two of our Delta Stays credits for that one. For those of you that are familiar with that there's either $200 or $150 Delta stay credit on some of your Delta card. So that was great. Covered pretty much all the hotel while we were there. And we did a bike tour in Salzburg, which was the Sound of Music themed bike tour, which it was the first one we'd ever done with our kids. And we'd kind of been dreaming about it for a while to have our kids get old enough to be able to do that kind of stuff. And so that was very fun. Spent 2 days in Salzburg, and then we made our way to Innsbruck, if you work your way west across Vienna, and there we stayed in a castle, which was wild. So it's a castle called the Schloss Matzen Castle, and what we didn't know that we know now is it's a type of accommodation that is used in Europe called a garni, G-A-R-N-I, and what we didn't know is that it pretty much means they just don't have staff there. They pretty much just kind of set it and forget it. Like you get a text with, here's how you get in the castle, and there's a code. Here's how you get in your room, and there's a code. And like, I think we saw somebody there at breakfast, but there was never anybody else there, either working there, or I think we saw one other guest while we were there. So it was very unique experience to pretty much get to have a castle to ourselves. And a way to just keep having fun with our kids. We ended up that night, we couldn't figure out where we wanted to eat, so we ended up finding a McDonald's that was like 2 miles from us in Innsbruck and just brought our drive-through McDonald's back, and we were eating it in like the center of a castle, which was, I don't know, for us kind of hilarious.
David, this episode's incredible. I'm like, I'm almost lost for words, which doesn't happen to me often in these, just because there's so many good things, nuggets that you're bringing, trip itineraries, ideas. I mean, this is an episode for someone to bookmark, because if they want to literally go to any of these places, you've just dropped nuggets of opportunities, places to go, things that it's never been on my radar, but it is now, of like where to experience and see. So this has just been absolutely fantastic. For sake of time, we got to start moving in the direction of wrapping up. But I mean, when we look through these type of trips, these experiences, I know you actually had more that you were willing to talk through. And I was like, hey, I know we only have time for so much. And this could be a 2 or 3 hour episode on its own. I want to ask you to give some advice to the families out there, and perhaps those that aren't at this level yet, but they want to be. They're hearing what you just said, and they're like, I would love to do that with my kids at some point. What would you say to those who hear all that and are just like, I'll just never be that good at points and miles, or this is just too complex, or that amount of bookings is so difficult? What would you say to someone that has perhaps those thoughts in the back of their mind?
You know, I think I would reiterate what I said at the beginning, that you've got to start by giving yourself some small wins and figuring out a system that works for you. How does it make sense for you to be able to track places where you want to get points and miles? How does it make sense for you to be able to track the best way to book something and then not avoid booking because it's not the perfect thing? So I'm just kind of an insatiable learner. So I love to listen to other people talk about it. Every episode I listen to of your podcast, DeAndre, there's always at least like one or two little nuggets that I sock away somewhere and I'm like, oh, I either didn't know that was a way I could book something, or I didn't know that was a location I even cared to visit. And so being like, whatever you're doing, whether it's doing laundry or driving somewhere, to just pick a few podcasts that are going to help you kind of reimagine what that type of trip could look like. And then get your kids involved with it. I mean, and it is totally okay to have it start with, hey, where would be fun to go in the US? Because it's really not that hard to get a sign-up bonus to be able to travel somewhere, get your flights paid for with points and miles, and just kind of start getting the bug both of what works for you in a system standpoint, but also what does your family love to do? And I think to be able to start in those contexts, and I mean, one thing I didn't mention, which I have to mention about Austria because it really connects with one of the things that's most well known there, is do an alpine slide if you go. There's an alpine slide called Mitre's Alpine Slide near Innsbruck. It was by far our kids' favorite experience. And while you're in the U.S., find an alpine slide. So see if your kids have fun doing that. And then when you travel somewhere else, you can start looking for those things in other contexts.
I absolutely love that, David. And I got to also reiterate, you've been doing this for 10 years plus. And as you mentioned, it was 4 to 5 years before you did the family of five in business class. You've been leveling up. You've been increasing your knowledge. I appreciate you being not only a listener, but in the community and active in the community as well, because not only do you give back as you are here, you're gaining knowledge as well that's helping fuel future trips for yourself and your family. And it's a constant process of development and leveling up in the points and miles world. I am curious, at a high level, because I know you just mentioned Built, I'm sure you're attacking all the programs at this level, or at a high level, but at this stage, kind of, again, 10 years into the journey, what would you say you're most focused on? Is it specific programs, specific flexible currencies? Do you weight one more than the other? Of course, we know about, you know, Hyatt has some devaluations, which by the time this airs might have already just happened and such. So obviously, this is an ever-changing and dynamic world. But the strategy that someone like you or myself are going to employ at this level that we're at versus a day one or month one or year one person is going to be a little bit different. So I'm really curious for you and your wife, kind of, where's your focus now?
You know, I think right now it's looking at where are the places that have the best offers. I mean, that's truly what I end up going towards, because at this point, I've got enough available for, I mean, my goal is I want to have enough to be able to do a summer trip with our five. Like, that's the big goal, is do one big summer trip every year to kind of go all out on. And so it's realizing, like, I know generally what types of miles I'm going to need to do that type of trip. And so then it's, if I don't have enough in that area, whether it's Amex or Chase or Citi or Capital One or Wells Fargo or Bilt or wherever there's transferable currencies, but then it's trying to figure out, okay, where's the best offer and how, like, one, am I eligible for it? Because I've, you know, kind of gone down the rabbit hole on a lot of cards at this point. But then trying to kind of maximize what the return is on each of those when those offers pop up, and then just trying to keep myself organized with it.
I love that, David. I think that's fantastic advice. And the last thing you mentioned, the organization piece, that's honestly probably one of the harder parts of points and miles, especially as you level up into the levels that we're at, is just staying organized with all the cards, with all the apps, with all the offers and all the different things. So I think the organization is absolutely key. Dave, I know you're in the WhatsApp community and so people can connect with you there, but are there any other places you want to mention where people can follow you, your journey, the family travel you do, anywhere else that you want them to connect with you?
You know, I am terrible at social media, so don't try and find me on social media. You won't find me. I probably connect most in places like the WhatsApp group. There's also a Slack group connected with another group called Milenomics that I connect with quite a bit in there. So those are probably the couple of places. Or, you know, if you reach out to DeAndre, I can get you my email address. Or I mean, I'd love to chat with people if you're trying to build out a plan, because it's just fun. I love the puzzle and I love thinking about the ripples of what that means for other families getting to experience something else.
David, I love that. We'll make sure to, well, you're in the WhatsApp group, so they're going to have to connect with our WhatsApp group to connect with you from that standpoint. As you know, as a listener to the show, there's two questions I almost always love to wrap up with. The first question is, who else should we have on the show that you think our listeners would find some value in, or you'd love to hear more of yourself from?
You know, one of my friends who, she and I have really talked a lot about this together and are both trying to navigate family travel. Her name's Jamie, and her Instagram handle is The Curated Points Travel. So Curated Points Travel is one I would recommend. She and her family have done some really cool trips. They were just in Africa doing some stuff. And so navigating things in a little different than how we do it, but also just getting to have a chance for her family to experience that. And then if you haven't had the folks from Milenomics, Sam and Robert, I would highly recommend them. They are incredibly thoughtful about how they think about points and miles. So those would be ones I think of.
Those are two great options. I'd love to have both of them on the show. So I'll connect with you and figure out how we can get them on the show after this. And last question for you, David. Any final thoughts before we wrap up? You've offered a lot of insights, a lot of advice. We've covered a lot of different things. Any last tidbits you think that the listeners might want to know or that you want to mention?
You know, I think the last piece I would say is, when you think about points and miles, don't think of it as a way to get free travel. Think of it as a way to augment your budget. So when you think about how you're doing travel, figure out, okay, what's my budget for this trip? And then integrate every component of the trip into that budget. And the points and miles are a component to it, but don't allow the thought that if I don't have the points and miles, I can't do the trip. Like, money actually can be spent on travel also. So figuring out what the budget is and then building out all the different components, whether it's taxes and fees, whether it's a hotel, whether it's a food tour, whether it's an alpine slide, but to be able to take that combination of points and miles with budget to really expand your travel to be something that'll be memorable for your family.
I love that last piece of advice. I've mentioned this many times on the show. While yes, we talk about quote unquote nearly free travel and it's on the website, it's really great for marketing and clicks and Google optimization. But the reality of it is just exactly what you said. Points and miles allows you to expand, or as you use the word, augment your budget. Because if as a family, your travel budget is $5,000 for a trip, and that's for flights and hotels and everything else, for most people, that $5,000, 70 to 80% of that, if not more, is going to be your flight and your stay. Well, what if you were able to get so much more value? You still spend that $5,000, but now your flight and your stay cost you less than $1,000 because of points, right? And what could you do with that extra $3,000 or $4,000 that you get to spend now on the experience on the ground, doing things that maybe you wouldn't have had in the budget otherwise? And you've talked about some really incredible things in Hong Kong and in Japan and Austria and Switzerland and Singapore that I think really could set the bar high for people to create these experiences, whether they're like my wife and I, or it's just the two of us, or an entire family. And so for that, David, I thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks a lot for having me, DeAndre. It was great.
Absolutely. And for the listeners out there, if you enjoy this episode today, be sure to follow us on all the social media platforms. Sign up for our newsletter to get weekly insights sent directly into your inbox, as well as our WhatsApp community chat. If you want to connect with people like David, well, our WhatsApp group is how to do it. And the only way to get there is through either subscribing to our newsletter and or joining our Facebook group. That's where the information is pinned for those things. And as always, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, do all the things, and we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights, and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at voyescape.com.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.